So with that kind of introduction, I hope I don't disappoint you. So for those of you that are new to the meeting, welcome. I'm glad you're all here. Every year I try to go through and just get the best studies, the best research, the best evidence about why plant-based living is so important to our everyday existence. And I think this year there was probably a more of a tipping point than ever before, as you'll see. But probably we should start with a little bit of a scare factor, right? There's two ways to learn, right? Pleasure and pain. So maybe a little pain. But this was just came out in March 2019. It was the statistics update of heart and stroke. And basically what they said is that in adults greater than 20 years of all, 48% overall have marked increases in cardiovascular disease overall. So that's pretty crazy. So one in two of us in this room will probably have coronary disease and probably have it prematurely, unfortunately. Now, the concept of eating well is not new, right? I've shown you Thomas Jefferson before. I've shown you Hippocrates. This is a really famous guy. He was Moses ben Maimon, or Maimonides, as people know him. And he said, no disease that can be treated by diet should be treated with by any other means. Pretty surprising to hear, because look at when he was alive, right? He was born in 1135. So here we are all these hundreds and hundreds of years later, and everyone says, oh, Dr. Freeman, you're so innovative. Here I am using peas and carrots instead of the latest stents or TAVRs or, you know, percutaneous lasers and all kinds of stuff. But it's very powerful. So I also want to point out that when I go through a lot of the data, it's important to say that there's not a clear-cut link, meaning I can't say that this food will cure this, or eating this way is going to stop this. All I can tell you is there's a lot of associations, a lot of signal in the noise, but there's still a lot of noise. And also, before I get heckled, there is enough protein. I have never treated a protein deficiency in this country. Never. Haven't seen it. So in order for you to be protein deficient, I have seen scurvy, and it was from an older woman who was living on saltines. But other than that, you can't do it. And remember that Earth's biggest vegans are gorillas and elephants. So there's a lot of protein in kale and spinach and broccoli. And as you saw before, if I ask a room full of smokers how much smoking is normal, everyone's going to say some number greater than zero. So remember that a lot of doctors are telling people to eat meat. How many times have I seen an anemic patient, and the doctor says, oh, you better go get a couple pounds of ground chuck. And I'm like, well, that may help you, and then it may really harm you on top of it, so I'm not sure why that makes sense. So doctors are starting to get there, and I'm sad to say that there's only one other vegan cardiologist in the state, and she's actually taking a sabbatical for a year, going to learn some advanced techniques on some other things that she does. So it's just me in the state, and it's a sad thing. There are a few others that are coming there, but they're not quite there yet. And if you haven't figured it out, we still eat poorly. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture came out and they said that they surveyed about the working adults, and they found that a quarter of them were eating very poorly in general. They found out that they were eating most commonly pizza, soft drinks, cookies, brownies, cakes, pies, and candy. Now, all it takes is a quick tour down your favorite hospital wing and go into the nurse's lounge or the doctor's lounge, and you'll see piles of donuts and bacon and all these things that I just described, sadly. Now, at our hospital at National Jewish, we actually have a plant-based option every day. Some are better than others. And then also at St. Joe's, we actually have a fully plant-based menu that's available, but it took a lot of work to get there. And so, in short, these are people who are eating very poorly in terms of the healthy eating index, and they have a lot of processed foods. But it's not just medicine that's starting to take notice. Many of you may have seen these new buildings going up, the WeWork building. Anyone seen it on off of I-25? Believe it or not, their CEO really seems to get it. He told the staff he's no longer going to be able to expense meals that include meat, believe it or not. New research indicates that avoiding meat is one of the biggest things an individual can do to reduce their personal environmental impact, even more than switching to a hybrid car. So it's always funny, when you drive by the fancy steakhouses in town, you see all the Teslas and you see all the Priuses, and then everyone's eating steak. It just doesn't make sense. And as you heard this morning, if you heard from the first man of the governor, you probably heard all the things that he was telling you is pretty scarily true. Now, one of the things that I try to do every couple of years, which is a big project, is put together all these various diet experts and try to come up with a guide for clinicians. And we finally got our second version of this, and there's actually a third part in the works, where we go through and teach other doctors what we should be telling our patients. Because as you saw Dr. Kim Williams present, the data that we showed earlier, that most of us know nothing about nutrition, nothing. 90% of cardiologists know absolutely nothing. So when you ask a cardiologist what I should eat, you should ask them if they know anything about nutrition first. So the key message in this one was, available evidence supports cardiovascular benefits of plant-based proteins, omega-3s primarily from plant sources, vitamin B12 but not in excess, mushrooms, legumes, coffee, tea, modest of any alcohol, fermented food, and seaweed, and basically all the stuff that you hear us say all the time. So basically sticking with a predominantly plant-based diet is the best way to protect your heart. And in fact, another study came out very recently also. This was 34 years following 79,000 women, 27 years of 44,000 men. And what they found out is that if you don't smoke, you have a normal body mass index, you get 30 minutes per day, sorry, there's a bug here, 30 minutes a day of exercise, moderate, if any, alcohol, and keep a healthy diet, you had a marked improvement in your life expectancy. So at age 50, if you followed five of these things, you had an additional 43.1 years. Remember, U.S. life expectancy is not 93, right? It's in the 70s or 80s, depending on who you are. And those who all followed all five were 74% less likely to die. And then many of you have probably heard a lot about liver disease as of late. So the number one issue in this country with hepatitis is not from hepatitis C or B or A. It's from non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, or fatty liver. And so that's what NASH stands for. And 1,500 subjects were followed from the Framingham Heart Study, and they had liver CT scans to assess liver fat. And for every one standard deviation in the Mediterranean-style diet, which is a predominantly plant-based diet, they had an increase of fat deposition. So basically, if they followed a Mediterranean diet, they had less fat in their liver. Pretty powerful. In fact, if you have 1,000 extra calories a day and you give these to 30 overweight participants and they follow them for 3 weeks, you have marked increases in intrahepatic fat stores, triglycerides. Which is an amazing thing. In fact, one of the things that I notice often often in clinical practice, is when a patient has a CAT scan of their belly for whatever reason, many times there's a little comment about, oh, there's incidental note of fatty liver. These people are at much higher risk for diabetes and heart disease, so it's something that I use to get them to change their lifestyle. Now, one of the questions I get all the time, and this was another study that came out very recently, is how quickly can cardiovascular disease be prevented or reversed? When am I gonna notice something? And believe it or not, I would tell you that within a few weeks, I typically see changes. And so in this study, it's a small one, 31 participants, they were put on a low-fat, whole-food, plant-based diet, and within 4 weeks, they had significant drops in their blood pressure. We're talking about a systolic blood pressure drop of about 17 points. That's not with any additional medication. Remember that when your doctors put you on medicine for high blood pressure, we're looking for a drop at least 5, 10 points. If we get 16 points, we're usually wowed. And here we're doing it with lifestyle. We get a drop in serum lipids, we get a reduction in total medication usage, and all kinds of other risk factors markedly improve. And this is just within 4 weeks. So again, when you give your body an environment that lets it heal, it heals, but you have to let it heal. Now, this was an interesting study that came out this year also about cooked meat. And what they did, again, is follow a big cohort from the Nurses' Health Study and from the Health Professionals' Follow-Up Study. And they found out that independent of the amount of meat consumed, if they used open flame or high temperature cooking and the Dundas level for red meats and white meats was higher, they had a much higher level of hypertension, high blood pressure, even fish. So if you're one of those people who likes your meats well, well done, in addition to all the carcinogens you get, it'll also raise your blood pressure. Now, many of you have seen me show this slide over the years, but people say, well, okay, so I'll make all these changes. How much is my cholesterol gonna drop? Well, the truth of the matter is you can actually get as much as we're attempting to get with a high intensity statin or a cholesterol pill just with lifestyle. So look at this. If you reduce saturated fat, you reduce dietary cholesterol, you eat more plant stanols and sterols, you eat more viscous fiber, you have soy protein almonds and you lose a little weight, you can get up to a 45% reduction in your cholesterol. And with a high intensity statin, we're looking to get the same thing, about a 50% reduction. And look, no drug on this list. Another great study came out showed that, believe it or not, what you eat affects your sleep, right? So many of you know if you eat a really greasy, awful meal and you try to go to sleep right after, you don't sleep very well. Well, this study found, interestingly, in association with dairy, they followed 104 patients that had obstructive sleep apnea, and the people who ate fat had higher fat, had twice the severity of sleep apnea, worse with processed meats, and then if you had dairy of 2 servings per day or more, also significantly worsened sleep apnea. Pretty amazing. And I don't know if you know this, but sleep apnea is on the rise. It's epidemic in this country. How many of you know someone who has sleep apnea? Right? It's crazy. It's everywhere. And then another study came out recently. Again, these are all within the last year or so. So healthy lifestyle choices may reduce the risk of a heart attack by 80% with nutrition playing a key role, says this study. This was led by Dr. Barnard from the Physicians Committee. And he found that a vegetarian dietary pattern reduced the mortality and risk of heart disease by 40%. So not a small number, a pretty powerful large effect. And hypertension also drops. And the same is also true with a Mediterranean diet, which is when it's done in the traditional Mediterranean way, which is not the American Mediterranean diet. A Mediterranean diet, for those of you who try to follow it, is not stacked high with lamb and feta with a few greens on top. It's really the reverse. But in that case, in this study, this was 26,000 women, 40 biomarkers were followed, and those with the highest Mediterranean intake had 28%, about a third less cardiovascular events. And this is a mostly plant-based diet. Imagine how much better this study would have shown if they had fully plant-based diet. Now, you heard Dr. Williams mention the portfolio diet. Anyone ever hear of the portfolio diet? Right, so it's one of those things that got buried in the sort of literature back in the days, but it was one of the first types of plant-based diets that had a major effect. So in this study, they looked at 7 trials based on this dietary concept. The LDL, the bad cholesterol, dropped by nearly 20%. The 10-year risk for heart attack, cardiovascular disease dropped by about 13%. And this is back in 2003. So it's a diet that includes a consumption of about 45 grams per day of nuts, 50 grams of plant protein, 20 grams of fiber, and 2 grams of plant sterols. And it was developed with an effect to lower cholesterol. So this is what it looks like. So the top one there is nuts, plant protein, viscous fiber or sticky fiber, and plant sterols. Pretty powerful, and this is not new, right? 2003 was what, you know, nearly 20 years ago. And then how about this one? Anyone ever hear of this Mount Abu open heart trial? Right, who ever heard of this one? Well, everyone's hearing about Esselstyn and Ornish, but they actually replicated the same type of study in India. In this small study, they did 123 people that had heart catheterizations or angiograms. They put them on a healthy and happy lifestyle plan, which was low-fat, high-fiber vegetarian diet, moderate aerobic exercise, stress management through a type of meditation, training in self-responsibility and self-empowerment, and it was a 7-day intensive, then followed for 2 years, and they met every 6 months. Sounds a lot like some of the things you've heard me describe before. And they found that they had 360 coronary lesions, they had independent reviewers look at everything, and the coronary disease patients who were the most adherent, the diameter, the blockages were reduced by about 18%. 91% of the patients showed a trend towards regression, and the cardiac events went way down, but you needed to be adherent at least half of the time. So here are the numbers again in their chart from their study. And again, very powerful diet, but again, same study done, but now in India. And then another recent study came out where they took a plant-based diet and they compared it to the American Heart Association diet. For those of you that follow the American Heart Association, a great organization, but they don't necessarily, their heart diet is not probably as heart healthy as it could be. But what they did is they took 100% participants, they randomized them to a whole food plant-based diet or the usual AHA diet, and the people who followed the plant-based diet had a 32% lower high sensitivity C-reactive protein, a measure of inflammation, and a non-significant, although a trend towards a significant reduction in LDL just by changing it. Now this is interesting. Many of you have heard of this Lone Star tick that's going around, right? If you get bit by a Lone Star tick, you become allergic to meat. Has anyone seen this? So there's a lot of immunology that's going on behind the scenes. And I always joke that people like it in this group here might be launching these ticks into the environment. So this was an interesting study. What they found is they found IgE, which is a type of antibody, sensitization to this mammalian oligosaccharide, was used to target, was a target allergen of delayed anaphylaxis to red meat, basically saying you have a really catastrophic response. And they found that the people who had this type of an issue had much higher rates of atherosclerosis. So pretty powerful just from eating meat. So when you eat the meat, you get allergic to this type of a thing. You create antibodies to it. So this is very early stages, a little bit deep in the bench research, but interesting nonetheless. And it may be part of the reason why the Lone Star tick is creating issues also, because it has an antibody that's created that's very similar to this. Now, how about this study? This was an interesting one also. About 12,000 participants analyzed from the NHANES study, and the authors developed a healthy plant-based diet index, and they allowed for comparisons between different types of plant-based diets. And if you ate a healthier plant-based diet, for every 10-unit increase in their score, you had 5% lower risk in all-cause mortality. So what we've shown before in prior years is that you can be vegan, but if you're a junk food vegan, you know, Oreo cookies, Coca-Cola, potato chips, you actually can do worse than an omnivore. So be careful that you don't overdo too many of the really great treats here. And then how about this one? 44,000 participants, we tracked the mortality rates, and they found that increases in consumption of what's called an ultra-processed food, So what's an ultra-processed food? Ready-to-eat or heat formulations made mostly from ingredients, usually combined with additives. So basically those instant things that you can just, you know, add water or just microwave. And for every 10% or more ultra-processed food eaten, there was a 14% increased risk of death from hypertension, cancer, obesity, and dyslipidemia. So what I want to point out is that a lot of kids, a lot of adults are eating ultra-processed foods at every meal. You got to be really careful about that. Now, for those of you that are into ketogenic diets, there is a lot of buzz out there. And while I've had a couple of patients lose a little bit of weight on a ketogenic diet, I've actually had most of them end up with problems, meaning more diabetes, more inflammation, and actually a couple of 40-year-olds I've taken care of now have had heart attacks while on the keto diet. Now, the question is, did the keto diet cause it? I don't know. But there's a number of studies out there suggesting significant associations. And in this study here, and these are, I put just four here, there's probably another 10, and there's a few more that just came out this week. But basically, the more low carb you go, or ultra low carb you go, the more death seems to be around. So I don't know about you, I'd rather be slightly overweight and alive than skinny and dead. So food for thought. And how about this one? This was an interesting study, small study, 16 participants. They put them on a ketogenic diet or a high carb diet for 4 days. Those who consumed the ketogenic diet lowered their peak performance and power levels and ran shorter distances. So it seems that the age old adage that when you're gonna go run a marathon, you should have pasta or whatever the night before probably makes more sense. And how about too much protein? 2,000 middle-aged men followed for more than 2 decades. Those who ate the most total protein in dairy, 33% and 49% higher risk of heart failure. And for those of you that heard my talk last year, you saw there's a big linkage between the foods that we eat and heart failure, the development of a weak heart. How about with low-carb and atrial fibrillation? So atrial fibrillation, for those of you not familiar, is when the top part of your heart beats in chaos. It's erratic, and it can lead to strokes. And it's epidemic in this country, right? I always take care of patients and they have this, it used to be a triad. It was high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes. Now it's high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, atrial fibrillation, sleep apnea, and non-alcoholic steatohepatitis or fatty liver. And it keeps going. And all these things come clustered. In fact, I actually have a couple of shortcuts when I'm typing notes that put all those together because they're so common. So in this study, they filed 14,000 diet records from the ERIC study, 22 years in follow-up, and those who consumed the least amount of carbs had an increase in AFib of about 1/5. And the groups were broken down into various calories, but in short, it's a little bit scary. Now, Dr. Williams briefly touched on this today, that there may be sort of this Goldilocks zone for carbs, where you want not too little, but not too much either. And so somewhere between 40 and 70% of calories from carbs seems to be where people do the best. So the chart looks like this, right? So over on here is the hazard ratio. You want your hazard ratio to be as low as possible. In fact, if you can get it under 1, that means there's less hazard. And then over here is the energy from carbs. So the sweet spot is right here around 45%. So that's probably where we want to be. And believe it or not, carbs are friends of diabetes, right? In fact, the ADA in the last year or two has finally endorsed a low-fat plant-based diet as beneficial to diabetes. So in this study, this was 7,500 patients, and they were in the Danish Diet, Cancer, and Health cohort. They followed them in general, and they found that the daily intake of high-fiber whole grains, including rye bread, oatmeal, and whole grain, reduced the risk of diabetes by 11% for men and 7% for women. And whole grain bread and oatmeal muesli were the most associated. So try to eat those if you eat grains. How about fiber? So 135 million person years were followed in this study, 185 prospective studies were put together, 58 clinical trials, a lot of people. And the observational data here suggests about a 30% decrease in all-cause and cardiovascular-related mortality. And the greatest gain was when you were eating about 25 to 29 grams per day. And then again, as I mentioned with diabetes, this was 11 trials on a plant-based diet. They were improved overall well-being, which was shown earlier today as well. And subjects reported less pain. They saw improvements in depression, quality of life, cholesterol, and adherence was higher, which was usually surprising because my patients ask me all the time, well, doc, am I actually going to live longer on this diet or is it just going to feel that way? But you actually do live longer, so it's worth it. And how about raspberries, right? Who hasn't seen some really delicious, amazing raspberries in the last couple of weeks, right? They're finally in season. We had kind of a late snow this year, so the crops are a little late. But frozen raspberries were given to 32 participants, either a cup, 2 cups, or no raspberries. And those who consumed 2 cups of raspberries saw the most improvement in blood sugar. For those of you that follow Dr. Greger on Nutrition Facts, He is super into berries, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be. They're really powerful for lots of different disease states. What about gluten? So as I always tell people, if you're gluten sensitive or allergic, you should avoid it. But if you're not, there's very little evidence that suggests it's harmful. In fact, most of it suggests it's probably healthful. And what they found in this study was that you had 20% less diabetes as the amount of gluten-containing carbs increased. So gluten intake was inversely associated with type 2 diabetes among largely healthy U.S. men and women. And I always joke, and you probably have seen this yourself, you go out somewhere and everyone's eating gluten-free pizza with pepperoni and bacon on it, right? Why are they doing that, right? You're much more likely to be allergic to the cheese. And pepperoni and bacon are considered to be as cancer-causing as cigarettes. So why don't you get a cigarette pizza? So, and those are gluten-free. Gut flora. So how about gut flora? So many of us have heard, and over the years you've heard me talk a lot about TMAO, which is what Dr. Williams was talking about. But gut bacteria diversity was measured in 248 participants followed over 2 weeks with a dietary intervention. And those who consumed more fruits, vegetables, and grains improved the diversity. High fiber diets increased bacteria associated with anti-inflammatory compounds. And genetic analysis was used to make measurements, and the bacteria that helped to produce butyrate were sustained in the more plant-based eating groups. Now you might say, well, why does butyrate matter? Well, depletion of butyrate producers has been linked to increased diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And it's produced by the intestinal microbiota. So basically, when you eat, you're feeding yourself and then trillions of bacteria. Butyrate is essential to maintaining the host health, provides energy to the intestinal lining, the epithelium, modulates the immune system, and it affects diverse metabolic routes throughout the body and the liver and the brain. Now, what about TMAO or transmethylamine oxide? So this is, again, from Stanley Hazen's work in the Cleveland Clinic. Increased TMAO levels are linked to atherosclerosis, chronic kidney disease, and heart failure. So if you have a high TMAO level, this is not a good thing. So in this study, they found 113 participants. They fed them red meat, white meat, or no meat. Chronic daily red meat, but not white meat or non-meat, increased plasma and urine TMAO. Red meat also reduced fractional renal excretion, so it kept it in your system longer. Discontinuation markedly reduced TMAO. So your gut flora changes very rapidly. And for those of you that see me talk on TMAO, I showed a study where they fed a vegan a steak in the name of science and showed that a vegan doesn't produce TMAO unless you feed them habitually red meat. Now, what about cancer? So for those of you that haven't seen the slide and you didn't see the slide that Dr. Williams showed that I also show, cancer is number two killer. Number one is cardiovascular disease. So they're very highly related. And in fact, there's a whole new field called cardio-oncology because a lot of our oncology patients also have heart disease or vice versa. So from the third expert report from the World Cancer Research Fund, the American Institute for Cancer Research, one of our cancer prevention recommendations is to make whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and legumes, such as beans and lentils, a major part of your diet, right? Now, this public service message doesn't seem to make it to most people. I actually have friends and colleagues who've never eaten a bean. Can you imagine that? Who's never eaten a bean out there? All right, no one wants to admit it, but I'm sure there's one of you. All right. And then how about this? 365 breast cancer survivors track symptoms, hot flashes, joint pain, fatigue, memory issues with soy and cruciferous vegetables. Higher intakes of these foods lowered the odds of these symptoms compared with women who consume little to no soy. Higher soy and cruciferous vegetable intake was associated with less treatment-related menopausal symptoms and fatigue. 18 studies were then looking between breast cancer and the intake of red and processed meat. Red meat, 6% more breast cancer. Processed red meat, 9% more. You know, when I grew up in New York, I was always worried that my own family would develop breast cancer because everybody had breast cancer when I was growing up. And why? Well, if you live in New York, you eat deli a lot, right? You know, 7 inches of pastrami or 8 inches of corned beef or, you know, hot dogs at the ballpark. And this stuff is dangerous. And colon cancer, right? How about this one? So in this cancer prevention study, they followed about 2,800 participants, 25% less cancer recurrence with a more plant-based diet, 30% more cancer recurrence with the standard Western diet. So dietary interventions are effective and they reduce cancer mortality despite a poor diet before diagnosis. What about gallstones, right? Gallstones, we see them all the time. Everybody's got them, it seems like. 4,000 plus participants tracked diet cholesterol levels and gallstone rates. Women who consumed a non-vegetarian diet, much higher risk for gallstones. Women with high cholesterol, 4 times more gallstones compared with the vegetarians. How about with stroke? So this was a study of 306,000 men and women recruited between 2006 and 2010, followed for 7 years, 66% more strokes with an unfavorable lifestyle, independent of genetic risk. That's not 6%, guys, that's 66%. And I don't know if you've seen anyone with a stroke, but it can be absolutely life-altering and disabling. So a healthy lifestyle means no smoking currently, so you could be a past smoker, healthy diet, so increased consumption of fruit, vegetables, they say fish, and decreased consumption of processed meats and red meats, keeping your body mass index under 30, and moderate physical activity 2 times a week. Who can't do that? We can all do it, and it's powerful. Now, this study scared a lot of my colleagues. I don't know about you, but a lot of my colleagues drink 5 Diet Cokes a day or more, right? One of my colleagues calls it the nectar of the gods. Unfortunately, if you have 2 or more artificially sweetened beverages per day, you have 23% more stroke, 31% of a type of stroke called ischemic stroke, more heart attack, and more death. Now, I don't know why there's not a warning label on some of these, because Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi are some of the most addictive substances ever created, right? You just want it, right? That when you see that commercial with the drips on the side of the can, you just want to reach in and grab it, right? 2+ artificially sweetened beverages doubled the stroke risk with obese women without previous heart disease who were 2 times as likely to have a clot-caused stroke, and in African and American women without previous heart disease, almost 4 times as likely. So stay away from this stuff. The best beverage for human consumption is water. Good. All right. So many of you have asked about heart failure over the years. So we actually published a review, and this is in the Journal of American College of Cardiology, and we actually covered a lot of the lifestyle modifications for preventing and treating heart failure, which is epidemic. For those of you that are not familiar with heart failure, there's 2 kinds. The most common kind affects the older folks, which is when your heart function is normal, but your heart gets a little stiff and it doesn't empty as well. And then the other kind is when your heart is weak. And when your heart is weak, it's very hard for the pump to keep up with the demand. And so what did we come up with? More exercise, stress management, and plant-based eating, right? You guys must be seeing a theme by now. So in short, there's a lot of things we can do to prevent heart disease. It just takes concerted effort constantly. Now, since I work at a respiratory hospital, I'm always keen on some of the studies that come out showing lung disease and diet. So this was a COPD study, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or emphysema, some people know it as. And in this study, they found 12,000 twins, which is a pretty large twin study, age 40 to 80, and 11,500 individuals were included. The twin individual with a low intake of fruit and raw vegetables, much higher risk of COPD compared to the twin that ate more. Now, it's hard to imagine that 2 twins growing up in the same family are not going to eat similarly, but in this case, they didn't, and it's very interesting to see. Now, how many of you are out there taking vitamins all the time, right? Who doesn't love their vitamins? Well, what I always tell my patients is if you eat well, your vitamins are really just making your urine very expensive. So popular vitamin and mineral supplements, by and large, don't do very much for people unless you have a deficiency. In fact, there was a study published very recently that showed that in general, if you were B deficient, you might need a B, but that's basically it. So if you eat well, you don't really need supplements. But antioxidants still matter. Remember that when we make vitamins, we're extracting all these things from all kinds of things and synthetically making them. But if you eat them in the matrix of the plant, the way nature intended for vitamins to be consumed, it actually works. And higher concentrations of antioxidants are associated with a lower risk for all-cause mortality, 40% lower mortality for specific antioxidants such as carotenes, all those orange and yellow fruits. What about fish oil? So by and large, fish oil is probably not ideal unless you have some very specific conditions. So in this analysis of 79 studies, significant evidence suggests that long-chain fatty acids from fish oil supplements did not protect against all-cause mortality, did not even reduce the risk for cardiovascular events, and some evidence suggests an increased consumption of ALAs from plants, walnuts, flax, ground flax, provided a protective effect against coronary heart disease, arrhythmia, and other cardiovascular events. In fact, another study with diabetics showed that those without heart disease who got fish oil or supplements or placebo, so they looked at both, they gave a group of them fish oil, they gave the rest placebo, they examined the cardiovascular event rates, and they found no difference. Now, there's a brand new form of super prescription strength fish oil. The brand name is Vascepa that came out that may change this, but it's a different preparation. So the jury's still out on that, but it looks very promising. But for the rest of the fish oil you're buying at Costco or Walmart or wherever, probably don't need it. And then another study came out very recently about depression, several studies, in fact. So this was 17,000 adults, ages 20 or older, 21 grams of fiber per day from fruits, vegetables, and all sources, were much less likely, about 40% less, to exhibit depression. So we should probably be using lifestyle interventions as an adjunct for all of the mental health issues that are showing up in our country. Wouldn't it be nice to walk with your psychiatrist? So, food for thought. So, less depression. Also, another study here, 41 studies on diet and depression occurrence. If you eat a lot of junk food and other things like that, you are more likely to have depression. Healthful foods actually help to regulate emotions better. And you can imagine that reaching for junk foods regularly is sort of this cycle that's hard to break, and you get there when you're not feeling well and you feel down. Now, how many of you are aware of this bacon mania that's going on? Right? So this year in particular, it seems to be the year of bacon. Everywhere you go, they're pushing bacon on you. So this was an analysis of 1,100 people with and without psychiatric disorders. Mania was significantly associated with the consumption of cured meat. Eating nitrated dry cured meat, but not other meat or fish, was strongly and independently associated with mania. So feeding meat preparations with added nitrate to rats resulted in hyperactivity reminiscent of human mania, alterations in brain pathways that have been implicated in bipolar and a number of others. How about Alzheimer's? So this was 70 participants, and those who consumed more plant foods, which was Mediterranean style, showed fewer Alzheimer's disease-related biomarker changes on their brain scans. And they followed brain beta amyloid levels looking for this, and the higher diet adherence was estimated to provide 1.5 to 3.5 years of protection against Alzheimer's. Now, one of the questions I get is, well, doc, I don't think I can be plant-based, but what about Mediterranean? Many of you may have seen, but the Mediterranean diet study that we've all been quoting for years and years and years was retracted this last year. It was in the New York Times. Anyone see it? So only one of you. Okay, so we just got one avid reader out there, but that's okay. So no longer truly randomized. In fact, they found that some of the data had been sort of tinkered with inappropriately. They had to republish it. They still showed, by and large, the same event rates, but it sort of put a very sort of bad taste in a lot of people's mouth, no pun intended. How about exercise? So I can't mention enough about this, so it's not just diet. I take care of people who are the cleanest eaters you've ever seen, and they still have heart attacks. So you also have to exercise. You want to get 150 minutes per week, and in this study that came out this last year, 11,000 people were followed for every one standard deviation higher physical activity at 6 years, markedly less future heart failure risk, and as little as 6 years of sedentary living increases odds for heart failure, which is the leading cause of hospitalization in people over 65. And it's really never too late. So in this study, 350,000 participants from one of the AARP studies, maintaining physical activity from adolescence into later adulthood was associated with about a third less risk for dying. And if you are inactive and increase your physical activity during midlife, you might have a 30% or more lower risk for dying and less cancer. So get out there and get active. For those of you that grabbed the Walk with a Doc flyer and threw it away or stuck it in your pocket, come walk with us. And you should stay fit in your middle age. Physical fitness in middle age is linked with lower risk of later life depression and death from cardiovascular disease. Highest fitness category, 16% less likely to have depression, 61% less likely to have cardiovascular disease without depression, and 56% less likely to die from cardiovascular disease after becoming depressed. Now, many of you have heard me talk about over the years connection, support, and love. Now, it's always strange for a doctor to talk about love, right? How many of your doctors talk to you about love? Anybody out there? Right? It'd be weird, right? And then the HR people would come in and be like, okay, you're done. But no, the truth of the matter is that love, right, or support or social connection is how we often refer to it, but what we're really saying is love, actually has major impacts. And in fact, in this study, 34 studies were looked at with 2 million subjects, and those who weren't married were at a 42% higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease, 16% higher risk of developing coronary disease compared to married people if you were unmarried. Those who were unmarried had a higher risk of dying and stroke, and singles with a heart attack had a 42% higher mortality. And then for those of you that are unhappy out there, we got to do something in a hurry. So in this study, 2,200 men were surveyed, followed for 26 years. After adjusting for all the usual risk factors, they found men who were satisfied versus unsatisfied with their marriage. And the association remained consistent after adjusting for heart disease. And they basically, the people who were unhappy had a 90% higher chance of sudden cardiac death, right? So all of you worried that your spouse is wishing you to be dead if you're unhappy, there may be some truth to that. So The Lancet is the equivalent of the New England Journal of Medicine in Europe. It's a very great journal. And basically, they have finally gotten on board with the concept that we got to change what we're doing in a hurry. And so they actually had this whole editorial. I encourage you to read it. It's called We Need to Talk About Meat. And basically what they said is they call for cutting back on meat. The evidence suggests a reckoning with our habits is long overdue. Can you imagine a modern medical journal saying this? It's pretty amazing. It's kind of like back in the day when they said like the earth was when the earth was not rotating around the sun, and now we finally switched it. We're finally getting there, and it's very powerful to see that. In fact, there's a whole EAT commission, and basically what they said is our universal healthy reference consists of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, nuts, unsaturated oils, low to moderate amount of seafood and poultry, includes no or a low quantity of red meat, processed meat, added sugar, refined grains, and starchy vegetables. Sounds a lot like a plant-based diet. And our definition of sustainable food stays within safe planetary boundaries, which basically they'll talk about that, and you'll see this in this next sentence, that it doesn't matter what anyone eats. If we don't change what we're doing now, by 2050, we won't have a world to live in. So it won't matter what we're eating. So we all got to do this now. And in fact, our poor environment, five biggest meat and dairy producers emit more combined greenhouse gases than ExxonMobil, Shell, or BP. And the report calls for a reduction by 38 billion tons by 2050. And with the current way our government's leaning, I'm not sure we're going to get there. Many meat and dairy producers do not report emissions. They don't have to. So if you're producing gasoline or cars or whatever, you got to show all kinds of emissions reports, but not if you make meat or dairy. And if production remains unregulated by 2050, meat and dairy will account for 80% of the budgeted greenhouse gas that we're supposed to be producing. Anyone seen this? It's pretty shocking stuff, right? And then how about Nature, right? Nature is the big journal for the sort of scientists that are in the standard sort of life sciences. Environmental pressures on the world's food system will increase by up to 90% by 2050, reaching levels that are beyond the planetary boundaries that define a safe operating space for humanity. That is a really bold statement. I've never seen anything like that in any of the literature. And this is a standard, meant for the PhD highfalutin Nature scientists. Authors recommend a major shift in Western diets, including a 90% reduction in beef consumption and a more plant-based diet. And then the lay public may have seen this in National Geographic. Eating meat has dire consequences for the planet. It says to feed a growing population and curtail climate change, scientists say we need to radically change our food systems. And then the New England Journal in January of this year came out for the imperative for climate action to protect health. And they said if no additional actions are taken, then over the coming decades, substantial increases in morbidity and mortality are expected in association with a range of health outcomes, including heat related illness. Illnesses caused by poor air quality, undernutrition from reduced food quality and security, and selected vector-borne diseases. At the same time, worker productivity is expected to decrease, particularly at low latitudes. So imagine that all these different things are now finally converging into mainstream science, that scientists can't not wake up and realize that there's a problem. They further said that the food system is a major driver of land use change, demands for fresh water, greenhouse gas emissions, and generally the environmental effects of animal-sourced foods are higher than those of plant-based foods. A systematic review showed that by shifting present dietary intakes to environmentally more sustainable healthy diets could reduce by a median of about 30% in high-income areas, and reductions in water and land use could also be achieved. Reductions in environmental effects were proportional to the magnitude of the reduction in animal-based food, right? So these are like the words I've been saying forever, and here they are in print in the nation's number one medical journal. When I ask my colleagues if they've seen this, almost none of them have, which is pretty surprising to me. Now, here's an interesting study I wanted to point out while we're at it. 408 people, they had their urinary epinephrine, their adrenaline measured. And the authors commented that living in a neighborhood dense with trees, bushes, and green vegetation is good for your health and blood vessels. They concluded that independent of age, sex, race, smoking, neighborhood deprivation, statin use, roadway exposure, residential greenness is associated with lower levels of sympathetic activation, reduced oxidative stress, and higher angiogenic capacity, meaning your blood vessels can repair themselves and make new ones. Right? So for those of you that don't have any trees, plant a tree today. And how about sleeping? I always tell people that, not only eating plants, exercising more, stressing less, and loving more, but sleeping enough. And so in this study, it's not just diet, they found out. This was a study from Spain, 4,000 people, no prior heart disease. If you didn't have more than 6 hours of sleep, you had about a third more atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. If you wake up a lot, 24% more. So make sure you get 6 or 7 hours of sleep every night if you can. And then this was a really interesting article. So this Annals of Internal Medicine, which I've been getting since I was a medical student, has an on being a doctor statement. And what it is doctors write essays about life and their experiences. And what this guy basically talks about is, with the 100-hour work week and the national epidemic of obesity and heart disease, we need to do something proactive. And he writes this after one of his colleagues was out with a heart attack. One of his very talented colleagues had a heart attack. So as an associate dean, I have seen firsthand what happens when faculty do not take care of themselves. Outstanding productive faculty are compromised by preventable diseases. Innovation and medical advances suffer because as physicians, we feel we're invincible until we're not. We all agree that lifestyle changes are best for our patients and the overall health of the population, but we do not take time to heal ourselves. We need to change our thinking about health maintenance. That's a really powerful thing. Again, almost nobody I know has seen this. So that brings me to raising awareness. So at National Jewish, and again, I make no money by having people come to this or not, so I'm not selling you anything, but we finally got an intensive cardiac rehab program. It's the only program in the region. There's one other down in Colorado Springs in the whole state. And it's the only program that insurance covers that reverses heart disease, angiographic proven reversal of heart disease, based on the work of Dr. Ornish and others. And it's a 9-week program, and you, in order to get in, sadly you have to be sick, you can't get in if you're healthy, which is a whole other issue. But if you have a heart attack or a stroke, we put you through and we teach you how to eat, how to live, how to get rid of stress, how to connect with others. And the people who leave this program, and many of you are in this room, have radically changed their lives for the better. And so I hope that if you have a family member or a friend or someone you care about who's been afflicted with this, send them our way. We'd love to fix them up. And if that's not enough, you may have seen this Consumer Reports. Has anyone seen this one? What's really in your meat? That's very interesting. I thought I'd share it with you. Consumer Reports investigation suggests that the Food Safety and Inspection Service in this country is failing to ensure our safety. The USDA organic seal can't guarantee that the meat will be drug-free. And in fact, some of the banned drugs, and you can see them in here, they have all kinds of interesting things like ketamine, phenylbutazone, nitroimidazoles, and all these other things that I can't even say. So it's pretty scary to see what's in your meat, but ketamine, right? This is like an anesthetic. You don't want this in your food supply, but it is. Now, I was hoping, I don't know if our governor is in the crowd here because I don't see his security detail, but I'm hoping that we'll follow suit with what California did. So in September of this year, Governor Jerry Brown in California passed law that state licensed healthcare facilities and prisons need to provide plant-based food options to patients and currently incarcerated individuals. And so there was all these great things that came out. California passes a bill requiring plant-based meals in hospitals. It's sort of a no-brainer, right? Hospitals and health systems are supposed to be places of healing, but almost all of them in the region serve things like bacon and hot dogs. And sausage in the morning. And it's not uncommon to see on the post-bypass floor trays full of hot dogs and hamburgers and whatever. It's scary. So there should be a plant-based option. It probably should be the default, but it's a step in the right direction. And then they did the same thing in schools as well. So this was another one that said that California schools would have to do this. And this is in response to greenhouse gases, not so much about health. But interestingly, The Economist this year said that 2019 was the year of the vegan. Anyone read this one? Right? Here's what they wrote. Fully a quarter of the 25 to 34-year-old Americans say they're vegans or vegetarians. That's an outstanding number, by the way. The business of providing vegan meals is booming. Vegan foods in America in the year to June 2018 rose 10 times faster than food sales as a whole. Many of you, as an example, might be familiar that the Lay's potato chip, the Frito-Lay company, bought Sabra hummus, right? The hummus that you all see. Why do they do that? It's a really popular snack food. Giant food firms are clambering onto the bandwagon, creating vegan lines. Tyson has a 5% stake in Beyond. And I wish I would have invested in Beyond. I don't know if you saw, but they got some outrageous return on investment. And you can find these now at your favorite fast food place, which, again, I don't recommend you frequent, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And the school district of Los Angeles, America's second largest, will start serving vegan meals in all schools. In its annual meeting, the American Medical Association called on hospitals to offer more such meals. And that was an initiative that Dr. Williams and myself and others were able to push through to get past the American Medical Association. So Neil Barnard, who's a good friend of mine, also is talking a lot about the breakup with bacon. And this is a new ad campaign, is DC bus stops, bacon can bite you back. It says, and I don't know if you can read it there, bacon and other processed meats can cause colorectal cancer. Finally, we're getting there. In fact, he has some serious willpower here. He walks out in front of McDonald's with signs that look very familiar, basically telling them that they should stop because they actually had this bacon hour thing where you can get like free bacon on your McDonald's or whatever. It's very scary. So I encourage you to read more about that. But it's finally, there's people that are really into this and making things happen. More major U.S. Restaurant chains are putting plant-based meals on the menu. At White Castle, which is a chain out in New York and the East Coast, you can see this. Carl's Jr., a number of others. Burger King is starting this. IKEA is finally doing this. I think I showed a couple of years ago one of the slides that IKEA meatballs were horse meat, and they had to pull them because they labeled them as beef, and now you don't even have to worry if it's plant. And then I think I'll probably start to close here. I only have a few slides left. I thought this was a funny one. So even with a hurricane coming, people would rather starve than eat vegan food. So I thought that one was kind of interesting. You know, and some of my favorites are on here, right? Like they have chow and a few others that are really tasty. And, you know, when we feed our friends some of these things just to get them used to it, they're always like, wait, are you serving me like beef or cheese? And I'm like, no. But they are really good. But anyway, so funny. So what does success look like? It's a low-fat, 100% whole grain, minimally processed, plant-based diet. Even Albert Einstein said that nothing will benefit human health and increase our chances of survival for life on Earth as much as the evolution to a vegetarian diet. And this is ringing true now more than ever, because you've seen now that Albert Einstein, a preeminent scientist in his day, it took all these years for it to show up in all of our modern medical journals. So I hope that this amplifies as time goes on. So for those of you interested in changing your life for the better, and Mike, there it goes, I do this great program called Walk with a Doc. They're actually all over the state now, and I encourage you to attend one. Our next one is August 24th. It's at Crestmore Park. We always do a high-yield topic. We talk for about 5 minutes. We give out all kinds of free stuff, free breakfast. Then we walk. It's a nice way to meet other people, get active, change your lifestyle, and get moving. And then for those of you who haven't seen this, I always think it's unfair for me to tell my patients, you know, you should probably abandon 70 years of your habits and give up all your plant-based, all your normal foods. I want you to eat plant-based, see you later, like a lot of people do. I actually give them information and materials and I speak, but we also now have one of our great Chef Jeffs in the audience, I don't know if he's somewhere, leads our plant-based support group, people who are transitioning to this lifestyle. Free program, meets at National Jewish. Come, spend some time, meet some people, learn how to do this if you're interested. Or do it on your own, read lots of books and movies, but get educated, because I think as you do your own research, you'll find that eating and living this way is really the only way to keep away long-term disease. And I always tell my patients, imagine you work hard your whole life, and I'm gonna be that guy too, where when you retire, what do you look forward to? Heart disease, erectile dysfunction, stroke. I mean, what kind of retirement is that? So I want to retire and live life to its fullest, and I want you to, and I hope you will make some changes if you haven't already. And with that, I'll take some questions.